Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Tassel, Baltimore. We are Baltimore, positively. Here at Timonium, we're at Costas. I have Raven scratch-offs to give away. It is a lucky batch. I'm going to give a whole bunch of these away at the end of the segment. We're going to be back at the Costas in Dundalk, where you can go for crabs. People keep coming here to Timonium, like, where are the crabs? They're in Dundalk. So if you're in Dundalk, you get crabs. Timonium's Crab Cakes. We're here at the racetrack. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Always a pleasure to have Damian Daugherty come by. But I think, Shinen, I don't want to, like, say this to puff you up, but you're one of my favorite guests because of this 30-year relationship we've had, long-time friendship. But your rock and roll, your sports, your politics, your culture, your beer, food. I mean, you're like a bon vivant to me. And I figured I let my hair out for this segment because I didn't have it out before. And I think of you as a rocker, right? Is that fair to say that?
I mean, I would say so, yeah. I mean,
you're on the REM end of things, though, I would say. No?
Yeah. I think REM is right in my wheelhouse. I'm kind of 1 foot in, like, Americana, 1 foot in, like, melodic power pop. So, like, the records that I put out two records, they're right in that wheelhouse of Americana slash
power. If I put you into Spotify and AI, and it gave five bands that would be like your band,
I
would put REM at, like, Beatles-y, but not, you're not like a 60s band.
But
you're
more
like
an 80s, 90s,
you're more
Matthew
like an 80s
Sweet,
college band, right?
Yeah.
So, Matt, go ahead, Matthew Sweet, REM.
Replacements slash Westerberg.
Okay.
Lemonheads. One more.
Elvis Costello? No.
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the last time you got together, we got together, you pooped on Hootie and the Blowfish, and I know you love the Black Crows, right? You love the Black Crows.
Yeah. I mean,
that Rolling Stones-y kind of bluesy
absolutely.
Way. Okay.
Yeah.
So my buddy Steve Gorman, Baltimore guy, right, drummer from the Black Crows, has a band that he put together. On the sly, nobody knew about this band until like 6 weeks ago. They're called Howl, Owl, Howl. It is Darius Rucker, Steve Gorman, the drummer from the Black Crows, and Mike Mills, the bass player from
My God.
So I bought tickets. I'm going down to Nashville next week for a Cameron Crowe thing. And they're rehearsing next week. Gorman's coming on the show. But they're playing like 10 dates on the East Coast. They've done a whole album together out of their friendship. So this reminds me of like you being a basement musician with your buddies.
And you,
the guys that are on your record are musicians you like, people you like, humans you like. You weren't trying to put a band. You weren't trying to make money. You're a sports writer.
Yeah.
Like, they put this thing together organically, and they're going out on the road, and they're from Hootie
and
the Blowfish, REM, and the Black Crows.
I mean, that's a pretty good pedigree. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, like, you at least have 1 foot in the REM side of that.
I do, yeah. I mean, I grew up in Georgia, man. I mean, they were massive for me, certainly in college. And when I got to Vanderbilt, that's when they were blowing up. And I saw them, for $3
nice.
At the Exit Inn, you know, in Nashville.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've been to the Exit Inn.
REM came through twice a year. At least.
See, I mean, you're a sports writer, and how many World Series games? You've done more than 100 World Series games, right?
Probably. Probably 20 World Series, I'm guessing, so times an average of five to six.
I did my number. I'm at like 52 or 53 World Series games that I've personally seen.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen one in 20 years, but I went to every one for 12 years or whatever, right?
Yeah.
You know, 12 times six is whatever, five, whatever it was, right? I was there the night Carter hit the home run. Were you there?
I was not, no.
You hadn't gotten onto the beat yet?
Had not, no. No.
So this thing with the Blue Jays, like, really, it's brought me back to that period of time and seeing. I know what that dome sounds like when it gets loud. When that big home run, the Joey Bats home run a couple years ago, you might have been.
Oh my God!
One.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you've seen some ish, and I've seen some ish. I mean, I remember the Leyritz home run at Fulton County Stadium. I was sitting next to Ken Rosenthal and Mitch Albom.
Wow.
Mitch Albom was on this side. And Ken Rosenthal was on this side, and the Leyritz home run happened, and the Braves were winning the series.
Yeah,
they were trying to put the nail in the coffin.
Yeah,
dude, and this is
off of Wohlers.
Ray Lewis once said, "You could hear a rat piss on cotton."
That's I remember that. Yeah, that was off of Wohlers, right?
That was really quiet. Yeah. I've never heard the air go out of a place. Yeah. But the World Series, man, is like that, right?
This one?
You've been going to World Series.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a home crowd. It's not like a Super Bowl. You know what I mean?
It's pretty corporate. I mean, you do have a majority of hometown fans, but it's pretty corporate. You got a lot of, you know, sponsors and
big
it's
$500 to get in if you get lucky.
Yeah. So, but you're right. It does have an atmosphere. It is a home field advantage.
All right. So Dave Shinen is here. I want to do baseball. I want to do rock and roll. I let my hair out. And, you know, I always wear a belt buckle to honor you. And, you know, this week with the loss of the great Ace Frehley.
Oh, yeah.
You know, was Kiss your first thing or was that not hip enough for you? I don't understand.
I was never a huge Kiss guy.
But they were such a gateway drug.
They were massive. I remember in high school they were massive. I was a little more classic rock at that time. And remember, I grew up in Georgia, so, like, you know, my wheelhouse was Springsteen, you know, even down the southern rock route to Skynyrd and
Almonds
and stuff like that. But yeah, I would say at that time when Kiss was blowing up, Springsteen was my North Star.
Why did you learn to play the guitar?
Probably Springsteen.
That's it, right?
I mean, yeah, probably so.
What's the first thing you wanted to learn how to play? That would tell you why you want to learn to play the guitar, right?
I don't remember one thing. No, because I was also playing piano. So I wanted to be Roy Bittan and Bruce Springsteen, you know, at the same time. You know, like
you were going to be a singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're...
So Billy Joel, you know, I wanted to be Billy Joel and Springsteen.
How'd you become a sports writer?
I was a sports writer almost before I was a musician. Like I grew up with the AJC, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Dave Kindred was my Furman Bishop. Yeah, all those dudes. Chris Mortensen was on that staff. You know,
who was the famous guy that wrote about Southern life for the AJC?
Louis
Grizzard.
Yeah,
wow,
fantastic
legend.
Local columnist.
Legend. Yeah.
I grew up. I learned to read from the sports section. And then eventually when I realized I was not going to be a baseball player, was not going to be a basketball player, was not going to be a football player, was not going to be a golfer, sports writing became my thing. I was well-read. It was a natural. I was always going to be a sports writer from probably age 14 on.
Well, you're not covering the World Series, which I reached Dave Shinen's my guest from the Washington Post. He lives here in Baltimore. He is a recurring figure in my life for the last 30 years when we shared press boxes at Camden Yards together. And, I mean, I see Maskey out asking all the tough questions now with the Ravens, so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
What are you doing at the Post and the baseball side of this for a year? I mean, A, I'm blessed and shocked to have you here because you'd be getting on a plane tomorrow to go to Toronto easily, and I thought kind of you were. It's been a weird year for baseball, and I've kissed your ass about 5 times this week without you even knowing it. I did it before you got here. You sat with me a year and a half ago at Coco's. You remember with that? You came out to Coco's
Rasig. Rasig, yeah.
So you, me, and Rasig were together, and the Orioles were in first place, and they were a rocket ship, right?
Yeah.
It was like July a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
They were really in their groove of first place. They had just beaten up the Yankees.
Yeah.
They were coming on, right? And they had won the 101 games a year before. It looked like they were headed that way. The Ravens had just lost the championship game to the Chiefs, right?
Yeah,
15-2, home field, no reason to believe that they couldn't get better and all that. And I was asking which one was going to win the World Series or the Super Bowl, who was going to have the first parade. And you presciently said neither. As a cynical sports writer that you are, cynical Washington Post guy.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to do. And I think, I stand humbled here a year and a half later sit here and say the manager's been fired.
Yeah.
The Orioles have been in last place.
Yeah.
The Ravens are in last place. And if they don't get their quarterback back,
they're going to stay there.
They're going to stink. Yeah. So sports is so... Like, you grab it, and then the Dodgers spend all the money they get there, and the Yankees have been trying this for 20 years and can't pitch a drop. I mean, and the Mets too, right? Literally.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that in the case of baseball, for sure we have seen in the last few years a dichotomy of haves and have-nots, and it used to not matter so much in baseball.
Well, Bud always preached that. It always mattered, but the numbers in the end would say, look at what the A's did.
Look
right?
Who's winning World Series these days. I mean, it's the you know, you can still get to the playoffs with a low payroll. You can still be the Tampa Bay Rays or the Orioles. You know, you can be the Indians. Guardians.
I've made that mistake.
To win World Series these days, I mean, think of who's won the last two. You know, the Dodgers won. The Rangers had a big-time payroll the year they won. Before that, the Astros, right?
They cheated.
Well, yeah. But, like, it is top five payrolls that went. So the Dodgers are number one in payroll this year. The Blue Jays are number five. They're not, you know, they're not some small-town chumps.
Well, I was
they're
getting
the
ready to say.
They're the fifth biggest payroll in baseball. This is a clash of big-time, big-market teams.
Okay, so let's talk about the Blue Jays for a minute while they're, I'm looking at the Blue Moon sign here. We're at Costas. Dave Scheinen is my guest on the Washington Post. I talked to Luke about this, and I've spent so much time in Toronto, and I know you have as well, pulling your passport out. Geddy Lee, I'm kind of pulling for the Blue Jays because of Geddy. I got my hair out. Got my Kiss belt buckle on. I did opening day there this year.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah,
Luke and
yeah.
I went up together.
Yeah, right.
Cold,
I remember.
The whole deal, right? We went up, and I hadn't been there in for a baseball game, probably 10 years for a baseball game. Since my 2015, I did all the stadiums. So I went, and opening day, you could feel it, whatever, but the Orioles were supposed to be the team in the World Series.
Yeah.
The Blue Jays were supposed to be the team, was no good. And whenever I'm there, I always think to myself, this is the national team, even more so now that the Expos are long gone, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you feel the nationalism, even when Trump's not trying to destroy them and us simultaneously, that they could be the Yankees or Dodgers if they wanted to be. They have enough money. They're a national team. I think this is a real problem for the Orioles. I think this the fact that the Blue Jays have awakened for the next couple of years at least, right?
Yeah.
Having
a
World Series, having a taste of that, maybe winning the World Series this week, maybe.
Yeah.
You certainly can. It's
capable. Yeah.
That awakens them in a way that you and I remember when you first got on the beat, when I went up there to see Joe Carter and the Malachi, the Nail, Harnish, all of that stuff that happened. That the Blue Jays were $3.5 million every year. They were the ones that were going to sign free agents. They were the ones that were going to deal for Winfield, for Molitor, for Henderson, for whomever they needed, right, at that point.
Yeah, Alomar.
We haven't seen them be that kind of a giant. And in this division where the Yankees and the Red Sox are, you know, God bless Mr. Rubenstein if he thinks they're going to do this on the cheap or that this city's just going to squeeze out money and run down there and buy skyboxes and all that. This has been a really, really rough bad entryway for this ownership group on the field, off the field, with ticket holders. I know you read about it and see about it because you live in Baltimore. The Blue Jays winning is a nightmare that I didn't even see over the hill.
Yeah.
Even when I was there 6 months ago to say, you don't have to worry about them.
Yeah.
You know, you have to worry.
Yeah.
Now, any free agent you want to sign, Blue Jays are going to want to sign them, and they're going to be willing to pay more. They
are. Yeah. And when you think about the advantages they have in Toronto of being the national team, having drawing revenue from across that entire country, having the whole country behind them, and contrast that to what the Orioles face here in the market with another team, you know, 30 miles away, and neither team is thriving right now.
You sound like Peter. That's exactly what Peter was telling me
all along.
Peter said, you're Washington Post, you're not going to get a team.
Well, right. But you know what? I mean, there was a little bit of truth to that. Both teams have been damaged by the relationship, you know? And you saw this play out most
vividly
with the Masson.
They've been damaged by an awful television network, too, for 20 years.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't turn that into Nesson that was going to be a baseball machine, a baseball marketing machine that the Yes Network became for the Yankees.
But these two teams combined are not drawing what the Dodgers are drawing, you know? It's become a problem, you know, and I don't know what the solution is. I just know that you're absolutely right that if the Blue Jays are going to be this sleeping giant, this monster that has now arrived on top of the Red Sox and Yankees money machines and, you know, the smart guys in Tampa that are always going to be one step away, you know, it's so tough to win.
I was fortunate enough to be in Toronto the night that Geddy Lee did his book tour and Alex showed up to interview him on stage at Massey Hall. The whole night that I was there, it was December 7th, 2 years ago, you can look the night up, The rumor, the buzz in Toronto was that Shohei was on a plane.
Yeah, he was on a plane.
Morosi reported that or something, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That was the day. So I was in Toronto, and the rumor was Ohtani was coming to visit Toronto. Not signing, but visiting. Just the fact that he would visit your baseball team means you're a player.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah.
It means you live in Las Vegas or Macau. You don't live in Atlantic City.
You have the wherewithal.
You're not in Bay St. Louis, you know, with your casino. You know what I mean? So I would just say Ohtani. Let's talk about him a little bit from World Series. From your perspective as a guy who's covered baseball, Hall of Fame voter, all the things that you represent, Dave, in all these years, I have said to anyone who will listen, Jim Abbott's the greatest thing I ever saw. Jim Abbott, for me, in all of sports, to say that
amazing.
That dude, just think about that dude against anybody with two arms, because everybody else has had two arms, ever played a game, right? So I'm a guy missing a finger, so I have a feeling about that, and Jessica Long and different people I know that are amputees. But the Ohtani, what he's done, what he's established, that no American boy would ever have his father make him the shortstop and the pitcher or the third baseman and the pitcher. We all played in Little League like that.
Yeah.
We all played in high school like that, right?
Yeah.
Then there's a point in this culture where you pick one or the other, and that was for Cal Ripken, who could have been a pitcher. That's for anybody, right?
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, this guy made that hump in a way that's even different than Dion or Bo Jackson or Brian, you know, like, we've never seen that. Adam Lowen was right.
I know.
Right?
I mean,
there's a handful of people that feel like they could have done it, but
it's fringy.
To do it and have a 4.5 ERA and to be a good second baseman who hits 12 home runs and if you could do that, you'd be amazing. But to be an MVP candidate and a Cy Young candidate, we're never going to see this again. Our culture won't allow this to happen, right?
I mean, the only reason I might disagree with that is that he has shown that it's possible, whereas before he came along,
About Babe Ruth.
Nobody in baseball would even entertain the notion. So now that he's arrived and he's doing this, I think that there is a generation of kids who are coming up seeing a pathway to it and being able to tell their high school coach, you know, hey, look, you don't have to make me pick one or the other. It is possible to do both of these. We have an example. So I'm not going to say this is going to be commonplace, but I'm saying that you got a generation of kids now who think this is possible. And that's the starting point.
I haven't talked to Mike Messina in a long time. I talked to his brother all the time, right? And I know you knew them both, and you and I were, along with the late, great Craig Heist, who I'm going to give you a minute to talk about, because Heisty loved Messina too. Messina loved me. Famously, we were old boys drinking beer and all that. And Mike was adamant for years during our beer drinking and sports writing friendship, 92, 93, 94, 95, 96, we would hang out. We went to Def Leppard concerts together. We went to Bon Jovi. We did things together. Van Halen. He would always say, I can hit in the big leagues. And I'm like, what could you hit? He's like, I think I could be a 220, 230. I could be a hitter. I could hit major league pitching. And he never had the chance to do that until he played the Braves. And you're probably covering that game, Dan, at Turner Field. First interleague ever. He singled off of Schmaltz or Clavin, somebody.
Yeah.
He pitched and hit in the game. And his brother would always maintain to me that he could hit in the big leagues. But here's where it comes down, dude. If you're Arn Tellem or you're Mike Messina's father or Mike Messina's Stanford coach or whatever, you're like, dude, if you can pitch like that, you don't need to worry about hitting 240 and being a second baseman or being an outfielder the other 4 days.
Right.
If you can pitch like that, you pitch.
Yeah.
And, oh, by
the
way, if you can hit and hit 30 home runs a year and be a 300 hitter, don't throw your arm out and get Tommy John.
Yeah.
Get a glove and go play
the
outfield like Adam Jones or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So there is validity and sense to say you could be a multimillionaire either way. You don't need to – they'll pay you for one or the other. You could be a cook or a server. You don't have to do both jobs, right?
Yeah.
So that is our culture speaking to that.
Right.
Because
right.
Messina was a guy who would have tried to convince somebody, dude, let me go play second base or let me go play left field because I want to hit. I like hitting.
Yeah.
But, dude, you're going to make $200 million and go to the Hall of Fame being a pitcher. Don't hit, right?
But we saw him. You also saw him shag fly balls during BP in the outfield, right? He was a great outfielder. I mean, he could run it down. He could jump at the wall.
Joe Paterno wanted to kick and play safety for him at Penn State, literally, right?
Yeah, Yeah.
So, but
he was an athlete.
I'm using him as an example.
Yeah,
he's a Hall of Fame.
It's not
athlete
likely, right?
Who could
right,
hit?
Right.
He could hit.
Right.
Now, whether he could have ever hit 275 or two, I don't know. Deion
right,
did it.
Right.
Deion was amazing.
Yeah. And to think that Ohtani is Mike Mussina on the mound and
Mickey Mantle at the
and,
plate.
And Mickey Mantle at the plate. I mean, that is it's mind blowing.
Eddie Murray.
It's like he's so far beyond anything we've seen. It doesn't even do him justice to say that we've never seen. I mean, he's a unicorn. Like there's nobody comparable in sports. I mean, it would be like Wayne Gretzky's
being
scoring 800 goals and then saving, 50 shots, it's just...
Some of it sounds like Snoopy. It's like impossible.
It's impossible. You know, it would be Tom Brady winning 6 Super Bowls, whatever he did, and then also playing DB, and stopping, being the best cover guy in the game.
But if Mike Mussina could only hit 240 and hit 8 home runs and drive in 40, it'd be a rudimentary second baseman, they wouldn't let him do it. They would just say, we'll get somebody else to do it.
Yeah, because that's
the
commonplace.
Game. That's the game.
That's a replacement level starting second baseman.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you were only good enough to just be an average major league hitter, they wouldn't let you do
right,
it.
Right. But even that on the surface would be amazing, right? Just to be able to do that.
Dude, if you could hit 248, play second base as a backup second baseman, and pitch the seventh
inning.
And
be a Cy Young.
Well, just to pitch a middle inning.
Yeah.
Give me 18, 20 good pitches.
Yeah, Michael Lorenzen did that a little bit. In the last 5 years or so, he would pitch some relief and then pinch hit.
Well, the Orioles have spent 30 years losing 30-3, so they've used from time to time.
So, I mean, it's a completely different game that he's playing than anybody else. On any given day, he's the best pitcher on the field and the best hitter on the field.
Is that why you and I are getting old and gray like this and being old, get off my lawn, just waiting to see something we've never seen before, literally?
I mean, that's why we watch sports. That's why live sports still rules the day. I mean, that's why, streaming services, networks, live sports is the bread and butter now of the entire television industry.
It is reality television.
It is. It's the only thing. It's the only thing that can't really be DVR'd or whatever, or streamed after the fact, unless you're really good at staying off social media and getting spoiled. It's the one thing you have to tune in to watch at that moment. Like, I can go watch Task or whatever the big new HBO show is. I can go watch that right now. But I can't tune into the baseball game 2 days later.
You got to wait. You got to wait for it to start. Appointment viewing. It's
it is. So, I mean, that's why I still care.
You disappointed about not coming to World Series, or like how many you've done a lot in a row? Is this the first one you're missing in a while?
No, it's the second, I believe, second or third. I miss being in the press box during the game. I do not miss writing until 2 a.m., sleeping for 2 hours, and then catching a 6 a.m. flight to the next city. It's all the stuff that makes me feel really old. I miss the baseball. I missed the games.
I went to I went to 3 baseball games this season. My most recent one was in L.A. I went to the Dodgers game. I went to the Hollywood Bowl finally. So,
oh, nice.
But we'll get back to music in a minute. But I did a bucket list thing. The Who and the Joe Perry Project. Steven Tyler showed up. Slash showed up.
Wow.
I had this crazy night at the Hollywood Bowl, but I was in LA for 2 days, and the second day Janet Marie invited me, and once Janet Marie invites you, Nestor, we made some new things. We got some new things to show you in Chavez Ravine. I want you to see what I built. So once she does that, what am I gonna do? Say no, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
My wife's like, take the tickets. You love Dodger Stadium. You're gonna love everything about it, even if you don't care who wins or loses. I saw Yamamoto pitch. I had never seen Ohtani play.
Okay.
So I got to see him struck out looking first at bat.
Yeah.
So love you, Janet Marie, always. So I got to get there. There is nothing like a night at Chavez Ravine for me. Like, I'd be jealous for you on Monday that you're missing game 3.
Yeah.
Because sitting at Chavez Ravine watching a big baseball game, to me, no offense to Dodger Stadium or Yankee Stadium or Fenway, or I'm not a Wrigley guy or any of those places. Dodger Stadium is my favorite place to watch a baseball game. You don't agree with that,
No,
do you?
I mean, off the top of my head.
You're a Tropicana Field guy. You miss Oakland.
Yeah, man.
You miss Olympic Stadium?
Yeah. Oof, man.
I miss Tiger Stadium. That was the best place to ever see a game.
I miss Tiger Stadium. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I could get behind that. Gun to my head, you get to watch one more game. Where would it be? It could be Dodger Stadium.
It wouldn't be Fenway, no?
I don't think so.
Like Fenway.
It could be Wrigley.
Oh, you're a Wrigley lover.
I love Wrigley.
You love Wrigley, okay.
Like it more than Fenway.
I like Fenway more than Wrigley. How about that?
Yeah. I mean, it's all personal taste. And to be completely honest, and I'm going to sound like a homer, but, man, I have a soft spot to this day for Camden Yards.
Okay. Good
always.
For you.
I mean, every time
I go there.
How do you
feel about the Jim Hendeman press box being ripped out and you never sitting there again?
I hate that. But I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner. It's happening all over the game. The press box is getting moved down the line everywhere, all over MLB.
Well, maybe this leads for a nice segue. Dave Shinen is our guest. We are here at Costas. I've got Ravens scratch-offs to give away. We're sticking to baseball. I mean, I can talk football. I can talk rock and roll. I can talk Kiss. Talk anything with Dave Shinen. You can find him. He's at the Washington Post. And if you see a guy walking around the pagoda at Patterson Park, it's Shinen because he does live here in Baltimore, even though he's a Washington Post guy. We're going to be giving the Ravens scratch-offs away next week on Tuesday morning. We're going to be at State Fair in Catonsville and then at Coco's on the 5th and then on the 7th at Pizza John's. And Shinen has been a victim of mine on the show in all of those locations, so I dragged him out here to Costas and Timonium to the racetrack here. On the baseball side, you mentioned the Jim Hendman press box being ripped out. Katy Griggs has been here more than a minute now, long enough that I don't know or haven't met her, haven't talked to her. I see what they're doing. I see the broadcast. I see where they're putting their priorities and sitting in front of rich white people and trying to be a corporate brand and all of that. I see really disenchanted friends of mine, people who supported Angelos to the end even though they didn't want to, other people that came in new last year, that gave him Birdland money. They're having trouble, obviously, selling these behind-the-home-plate premium anything in a year when they're in last place. They're going to get an all-star game, I guess. I don't know, man. Pretend you're not talking to a prick like me and just pretend that you're on BAL or something and speak about what your eyes see from ownership, new ownership coming in, and mistakes, good things, bad things, observations about the baseball operation, which you're the best at, but the business operation, which guys like you and me have to be the best at because nobody else is looking at it, to say, what's your plan? I mean, that's really, if I were having a beer with Eric Eddie and he weren't as arrogant to me as he was, and we were just literally having a crab cake, I'd say, give me the 5 and 10, like, how are you going to fix this?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be my first honest-to-God question is, do you have a plan to fix this? Because I know Manfred doesn't, and I know that the Sinclair boys don't in regard to your television and your RSN and your revenue model, and you don't understand your own fans. You pissed them all off coming in here being a corporate outfit. And where does your research tell you that premium money is in this marketplace to the degree that you're building it at? So that's what I would say. But for you, like, you live and eat and breathe in this space. I'm scratching my head, Dave, and I haven't met anybody that can explain it to me, and they don't want to explain it to me, you know? Like, what's the plan?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what you're seeing is this press box thing is a perfect example. For us to sit here and decry the small market-mindedness of this team and criticizing them for spending, but then also at the same time criticizing them blowing up the press box to put premium seats in there, it doesn't jibe, right? That is a revenue source, and that's why they're doing it.
Like patches on arms, names on stadiums, right.
Now, and you talked about Janet Marie Smith. I mean, talk to her about what they did at Fenway. I mean, you know, like, that was the quintessential, you know, little bandbox of John Updike's, you know, writing. They could no longer compete with the Yankees in that little tiny bandbox unless they started finding new revenue sources, and they did that, right? Those green monster seats didn't exist 20 years ago. They put them in to make a ton of money, and they did. They've blown up their luxury suites, so that's kind of where the Orioles are, and granted, we're 20 years behind the curve, but they're looking for revenue streams right now. And
I don't mind them doing any of this, as long as, you know what I want them to
spend the money on payroll.
I want them to do it well.
It has to be done well.
Peter didn't do anything well for 30 years. I mean, I'm not That's just a fact. Like, well, I can't go back and say, other than bilking his partners and getting all the money, sucking all the money out of the Washington deal, he did that really well. I mean, they really did. But as far as customers and baseball and operations and relationships and media and the community, just they didn't do any of that well. And I'm not seeing that the new people have picked up any of the low-hanging fruit of being nice to people like me that want to help. Just easy stuff to do.
Yeah.
Just eat, just being nice, being out, being a part of the community. It doesn't – it feels like these are country club people. Not doesn't feel like. It is. I've shaken hands with all of them in one way or another. It doesn't feel like they feel like this is a community endeavor. I think they think they're in the international baseball business the way the Ravens are really in the we'll make money in Berlin. The Orioles can't do that. The NFL can do that. The Orioles need money on Hartford Road, Bel Air Road, York Road. They really do. And I don't think they see it that way. If they do, as a consumer, I don't see it
that way.
That's
a problem then. I mean, you have to do the business model well. You have to open revenue streams. You have to engage the community to make all this money. And then the second part is you have to spend it, right? You can't be the Pittsburgh Pirates that, you know, are pocketing their revenue sharing money.
Well, these guys are going to have to spend it before they get it. Because they ain't getting it right now.
Right.
They're not getting it. They're just not.
Well, and that's still what we're waiting to see ownership do around here, right? I mean, it's time to spend. I mean, you had the nucleus. You didn't build the pitching staff around it. You didn't, you know, this is the time. This is the time, even more than last offseason, when you thought, you know, our kids are going to grow one more year and we don't have to do anything to win. Now you know you do. You've got to spend. You can't run the same pitchers out there. You know, you can't let your big dogs walk away year after year and not replace them. You can't be on the sidelines in free agency.
Well, and so what does that mean for them? That means the next 12 weeks is the most important 12 weeks of their year.
It is.
In regard to putting money in that they don't have. Bean counters over there aren't going to say, we're going to have this many premium this, we're going to sell more tickets, we're going to sell, like, this is going to be revenue next year. They lost 500,000 fans, man.
Yeah.
And that's not coming, that's not coming back.
Right.
They get $5 a ticket. That's not, they're going to have to earn.
The only way to get that back is to win. That's the only way you're going to get those fans back. That's it. It's winning. You're not going to be able to entice them with your little promotions. You have to put a winning product on the field.
Star Wars night's not going to get it done. You're saying
no. I mean, for the majority of markets in Major League Baseball, that's the case. There are a few that are self-sustaining. When the Cubs are terrible, they're still going to draw. The Yankees, you know, they're never really terrible, but they don't win every year. They don't, you know,
but they don't ever not spend either.
Right. So there you go. So there's a very small number. St. Louis, where you can still draw the 3 million fans even if you're not competitive.
Well, I see Milwaukee wants a new stadium now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, these markets that think there's more money, I just don't know where the money's getting squeezed out. The stadium's good enough to sell whatever you need to sell. Now you just need to get people that want to write checks to you. And what do you make of Rubenstein and Eric Eddie? What do you make of Katie Griggs? What do you make of Elias? What is your prescription for their offseason here?
Well, all right, number one, hire a manager, right? So I don't know what that looks like. I'm not really involved. I'm not reporting on them anymore. I don't have inside dirt. I mean, you know, I'll be honest. I'm intrigued by Albert Pujols. The manager in today's game is, I don't want to say a puppet of the front office, but their job is not so much X's and O's in the game. It is handling egos and managing people. And Pujols has a way with younger players. I've seen it. They respond to him, especially Latin players. I'm intrigued by it. You know, a lot of people are like, ah, this guy has no experience. I get that. You know, he's managing the Dominican.
I think they would do better to have somebody with experience.
Okay.
I
think so,
but
too.
I mean, selling credibility at this point is their job. But to your point, it doesn't matter if you don't win. John Harbaugh's got all the credibility in the world. They're 1-5. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right? Literally,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that he has as much credibility as he did 2 months ago, but
Well, he has no credibility with me if you read my column. So, I mean, I think he's a fraud, and I'd tell him if he walks in.
Well, there
so
you go.
I'd have no problem with
credibility,
that, so.
You know.
But the credibility of being, if he got fired tomorrow, he'd have a job in a minute.
He would. Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean about credibility.
Yeah. I don't think Pujols is the guy. I'm just saying that, like, I wouldn't dismiss that out of hand. Because, like I said, the manager is your manager is not going to win you many games with strategy.
It's caretaking.
It's caretaking. And strategy is all scripted. Lineups are coming from the front office. Pitching changes. Everything is coming from a central location that starts with the GM. So your manager may get you one game a year with strategy. That's it. What he can do, though, is manage egos and personalities. And I personally think Pujols is good at that. Personally, I would love to see them move the next step with the manager. This is the time to go out and get. I know he's not available, you know, the Terry Francona type, Buck Showalter, dare I say, you know. But that type of
Joe
guy.
Joe Madden's available.
Joe Madden's available. A guy.
He's not a genius or anything, right? I mean, like, you know, he's.
No, but he's a genius at managing people.
Of course he is.
A genius.
That's what I'm saying.
He's one of the best.
Okay, so if you want one of the best, why wouldn't you talk to him?
Yeah. That's the kind of guy I think that would
if Joe
would be
Madden
best
gets hired here a week from now, they smell better to me. They smell better than if they hire Pujols to me.
Yeah.
That smells better to me. Whether it works or not, perception of reality is fine, right? I mean, but it smells better. I can serve that up better.
Well, you know what's funny is that, like, Brandon Hyde kind of seemed like the guy who was that bridge guy to get you into contention. Then
I
you
thought
get
he was
rid
the
of
Bo
him.
Porter, dude.
Right. And then you get rid of him and get the big – but then they win, right? And now you can't really get rid of him, so you have to – you stick with him and stick with him until it becomes untenable. But, you know, that was their time last offseason, you know, like when Francona was available and stuff like that. But you couldn't get rid of Hyde at that point.
Mancino seemed so over his head – every minute of every day. I think he got better at it and they won games or whatever. But it never – this is exactly what I'm saying. There is a sniff test about that from my living room. Not Johnny Oates looking me in the eyes or Davey Johnson, late great Davey Johnson. Yeah. I'll give you a minute on him too. People dying every time we get together.
Man.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
But you and I cover Davey together. Or even Phil Regan or Ray – whoever those men of influence were, Mike Hargrove during all those years, even – I won't throw Lee Mazzilli in, but I'll throw him under the bus. But when it comes to – well, we laugh at Lee Mazzilli because it didn't have credibility once you and I were around it. Phil Regan lost whatever credibility he might have had. Ray Miller didn't have that. You and I saw that as young people, as reporters, whereas when Davey walked in the room, people sat up straight.
Yeah.
To me, Joe Madden, as a fan, I sit up straight. Albert Pujols, I scratch my head, right? Like, if they're trying to win the press conference – they're going to need to do at least someone famous like Pujols. They can't bring me Joe Espada. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And I don't know why that is or why I feel that way. But
well,
I feel like.
There's a presence, right?
I need a presence.
You're selling your presence in some ways.
Selling the credibility.
You're selling the presence and the credibility to the players, number one, to the fans, right? And to the front office. And, you know, I think Pujols has a little bit of that. Now, is he going to be a great manager? You know, we don't know. We really don't. But I think he's good at the presence. You know, he has a presence.
All right.
So does Joe Madden.
Rodgers and Bradish resurrecting this thing. I haven't had you on a lot. But by the way, Dave Shinen's my guest on the Washington Post, longtime sports writer. Sometimes we talk Olympics. Sometimes we talk rock and roll. I'll get back to rock and roll in a minute. It's kind of miraculous, right? Like, I mean, beginning of the year, they're going to win 100 games. Then the Preakness, the season's over. Everybody's hurt. Bradish was like, I'll believe it when I see it. Rodgers was like off the reserve, like not even thought about at the All-Star break. At the All-Star break, they're a freaking mess. I mean, they're still a freaking mess. They're a last-place team. They are what they are. But Rodgers and Bradish for this offseason, I don't believe in any of the bats yet. I mean, Henderson, I believe more that he could come back and be a 35, like a real guy. All the rest of it. Holiday, I'll buy into to some degree.
Still 21.
I agree. Yeah. That's why I'm saying, like, I'll hear that. But all the rest of it is ifs and buts and candies and nuts. Rodgers and Bradish, though, their coming on and their coming out party and what Bradish represented before, what Rodgers represented before in Miami, gives me a little bit maybe too much hope that you and Luke and all of you tough SOBs are going to come back to me in late March and say they didn't do enough, they should have signed pitcher X, and that guy went to the Blue Jays, and the Cardinals ponied up for that guy, and the Padres got in on that. Just like we did last year with Peavy, all these guys, right? So,
yeah.
For me, they need to spend a bunch of money.
Spend a bunch
of
money.
Not make me happy, to make you happy, because you're more. No, all of you were way more harsh with them, and rightfully so. Because were you on my show at Pizza John's like in March?
Yeah, something like
you
that.
You came
on
right before opening day.
Yeah.
And we were all bullish about all of it.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how are we going to feel in March? What's it going to take in March? Because I'll check off on Rogers and Bradish to almost buy them. We don't need a Burns. We don't need to spend $200 million. Oh, see your eyes light.
No, you do.
Okay.
That's
tell me
the
why.
Thing. If Rogers and Bradish are your 1-2, you got a problem. If they're your 3-4, you've got something. Now look. And I'm not sitting here saying that the Orioles can compete financially with the Dodgers, but look at what the Dodgers have done. They now have a bullpen with Clayton Kershaw in it, Roki Sasaki, and sometimes Tyler Glasnow. When they had all this pitching in March, everybody was like, "That's ridiculous. You have that's just too many pitchers. You're not going to know what to do." They all get hurt. They all get hurt over the course of the season. And then you finally get them all back in October. And what do you have? Well, you have a messed up bullpen that now gets fortified with some of the best pitchers in the game. You've got Clayton Kershaw, a Hall of Famer now, doing basically mop-up work in your bullpen. Glasnow is out there between starts. Sasaki is out there shoring up the ninth inning. Now, I'm not saying that the Orioles can spend that kind of money on nine great major league pitchers, but you have to have the numbers like that. You have to assume that you're going to go down to your ninth and 10th and 11th and 12th starting pitchers in the course of a season. And you do not want Rogers and Bradish being your 1-2 going into the season. You want them being your 3-4. It's easy to say when it's not my money, but if I'm David Rubenstein, I spend the money on pitching.
Okay, but from a positional standpoint, where do you upgrade when you think, in your mind, if you're Michael Eis, and based on the way he manages, all of these guys are going to the Hall of Fame, right? I mean, Westberg, Henderson, Mayo, Holiday, Rutschman, Kowser, who strikes out four times every three bats. The money that they sunk into O'Neill last offseason when Santander ran out, they're going to use that as, well, it's on the books. I mean, it's Chris Davis money at this point, kind of, sort of, right? It's crazy money.
Yeah.
And to think, well, what are they going to buy? Are they going to buy a right fielder? Are they going to buy a first baseman? They're not buying a second baseman, a shortstop, a third baseman. They got two catchers.
Yeah.
They got two catchers. The money they signed, we haven't said Basayo's name, and he's the only one with money.
I mean, there you go.
He's the only rich guy, right? I mean, literally, at the end of the day.
Right.
I know he's going to die rich. The rest of them have to sing for their supper at this point.
Yeah.
So, and that's based on him hitting the ball in Norfolk. If they paid everybody $78 million based on how they hit the ball in Norfolk.
Oh, man. Be a lot of rich
young
men.
But the other part of that is Boros wouldn't allow that for any of those guys.
No.
So you have all of this. They have to count on those guys. And Luke keeps saying that. If those guys fail, it's all over.
I mean, that's essentially right. Yeah. Because given their needs with the pitching, they're not going to be able to afford also to go out and upgrade three different positions across the infield or across the outfield. You know, they have to make their choices. And for me, I'm choosing pitching at this point with this franchise and this team.
So you want 2-3 relievers, 1 or 2 starters?
Yeah.
How much money do they need to spend? Where's the payroll need to be for you?
Oh, God. You know, I wouldn't.
Well, they're sitting in an office right now. Katie Griggs has a number scratched out, right?
Because
they're trying to run that kind of business. This isn't Peter and Brady Anderson getting together at Boccaccio and, you know what I mean? This isn't touchy-feely. This is, we think the Orioles' revenues can be up 38% over the next 4 years, which would get our revenue numbers to here and there, and this will be, like, this is how they're all thinking this way. They're whistling it out of their rectums, quite frank, because these are projections. I know one thing they can't project. Salary's not a projection. Salary's a reality.
Yeah.
What they're going to put into it, they have to look and say, this is our budget, whatever their budget is. I mean, the top side and the bottom side are going to be lopsided for these cats. And these aren't guys that are used to that. These aren't guys that are used to going in and saying, we lost $43 million last year as a baseball team because we put $243 million into payroll and we knew we weren't going to get there. Whatever they're putting into this, they know they're not getting there this year. They better know that.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, I don't know the numbers, but, you know, all these arbitration guys are making more, right? So your payroll is increasing naturally without you even spending a dime on additional players, right? So,
well, these cats have a debt service. I mean, I said many times John Angelos hit a walk-off grand slam. He is counting their money. John Angelos has all of their money. They paid current money for this team. Their debt service is enormous at $1.8 billion. You invest $1.8 billion, you'd like to think the thing's throwing out some profit. You'd like to think the thing's going to turn $50 to $100 million a year, especially if you're Mr. Rubenstein and you're out cutting every commercial you can to try to get more investors. He's been trying to get more – he's been trying to raise revenue. They just brought in the guy a couple weeks ago that has a piece of the Redskins, right?
Oh, right.
They brought the Mr. Moneybags. Yeah. They're bringing in more money back. Yeah. So their whole premise is – this is a sleeping giant. This we're going to be the Blue Jays. We're going to have 40,000 people. We're going to be in the World Series 2 years from now. Or maybe next year they think that way, right? And that would turn the revenue machine on for them. But these are money guys. These aren't baseball guys.
True. I mean, I think that, you know, this past season was terrible, right? But, like, at the same time, you have got a team, a core that won 2 years ago. And the question now is this an aberration? Was this an aberration this year, or is that what you have?
Well, you hope the new manager brings a batting coach, and right? I mean, you'd like to think that the hitters could be improved, right? I mean,
you would think.
Colton Cowser, I don't know what you do about a guy who strikes out. I mean, I really, in the history of the game, I haven't seen guys cut down on strikeouts very much, ever.
Yeah, I mean, that ship may have sailed right there.
Well, you're counting them to be your center fielder next year and get 480 at-bats, right? Like, literally.
I mean, as we sit here today,
I don't think they're signing a $100 million center fielder, do you? I don't think they see that as a need. I think they're with you.
I would
make
put
China
it behind
pitching. Pitching.
I would put it behind pitching, but it's a need.
Oh, it's a need now.
It's a need.
So you're out on him.
Cowser.
Yes.
I mean,
Westberg, where are you on him? I think he might be the best player of all.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
He's got to be healthy, but I like Westberg a lot.
Yeah.
I'm a believer. You're a believer in Mayo.
Jury's still out? I don't know.
Rutschman.
No, I don't think so anymore. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, he's not a kid anymore. I mean, you got a kid behind him. I mean, I know that, you know, they would probably rather have Basayo playing somewhere else. And Rutschman producing behind the plate, but you don't have that right now, so I don't know. I think maybe that one's to be determined.
I'm glad you and I just write about this at Baltimore Positive One, because I'm glad these aren't my problems.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I don't know how to solve this.
And I'm glad I'm not a baseball writer anymore, because this is hard.
What are you doing? Tell me everybody what you're doing.
Yeah, so I do Olympics. I'll be in Milan next February for the Winter Games.
Ciao, baby.
I'll be up on the mountain in Bormio. Doing a little alpine, and then other than that, I do like long term projects and big pieces and fun stuff.
The Justin Tucker thing. You have anything you want to say on that about the journalism? And I hope you read my letter to John, but it's my first sort of foray into. We're months into this. He's going to sign with another organization in 2 weeks. Nobody here even had the conversation.
Yeah.
All he did was say no, I didn't do it. He fingered the media as liars and heretics. I don't, the sleaziness of all of it. I called the Ravens sleazy in the way they dealt with me, in the way they dealt with, it's just, they're too big to fail. There's a level of smelling themselves and arrogance here that they're above the fray, that they're safe, they're protected. And if you're a football player pulling these shenanigans around town, that's part of the problem. Part of the problem is the power and the privilege to bend the law, break the law, be a serial, whatever you want to be, because they're so big in this community. And football's important here.
Yeah.
I mean, I need to tell you that. It's important.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything else to add to that than what you said, but I do think it did not reflect well on just about anybody. The NFL, the Ravens, certainly Justin Tucker. You know, it reflected really well on the Baltimore banner. They did amazing work on that. You know,
And the courage of these women.
Yeah, and the women who came forward.
I said,
God.
No, this didn't happen. I have proof that it happened. Here's all the proof that it happened.
Yeah.
Here's the letter to my boss.
Yeah.
Here's what we did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I keep asking myself, if someone called the switchboard at the Ravens and said, I want to talk to Dick Cass, I want to come see you, Mr. Cass, about one of your employees. I want to come see you, Mr. Cass. What? Because I did that. I did that as a bully journalist. Mm. All on the record. And I know how I was treated. I can't imagine if I was a woman who was a massage therapist who had it infuriates me.
It was gross.
It infuriates me.
It was a horrible story, horribly handled. And you're right. The courage of those women is what should be the takeaway.
Well, and that's what you and me being in the journalism space is having the pride, the integrity, the character to when we get uncomfortable truths, we report them. If you see something, you say something.
Yeah.
That's incumbent upon all good people. As far as that's where my Baltimore positive message. If I die tomorrow, put that on my tombstone because like that's really what journalism is about at this point, especially with this creep leading the country and lying to everybody. You know, like truth it has more value than anything. It's the ultimate currency I think we're all searching for, which is what is true and what is false and how do I know the difference? And if it's true, can you prove it? And that's what our job is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, outside of a court of law, we're the last – I'm all you're going to get with the Ravens and the Orioles, you know what I mean, in regard to asking questions because you're not getting it at Orioles.com or Ravens.com. And, I mean, your institution got taken on during the last presidency about, you know, Woodward and Bernstein and – honor and what's true and what's not, what are we allowed to put in the paper and what's going to get us sued and our legal department taken down, right? And we're in a really oddly weird space where the money and the power have really come to roost in this country they've always controlled things, but it's out of hand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're feeling that all the time at the Post right now. Yeah, it's
Olympics, what do you got? It's still exciting for you?
Oh, yeah. That's the highlight of every other year is the Olympics, you know. Paris last summer was one of the greatest sporting events I've ever covered. I'm expecting the Milan Winter Games to be phenomenal. My only regret is that I'm going to be up on the mountain and I'm not going to be in
Milan. What time of year is this?
February.
Oh, who wants to go to – I don't want to go to Europe in the winter.
Yeah,
nobody wants to be there. Take me with you.
I know. I wish I could.
I'll get you coffee, man.
Yeah,
I gave you good dopio in the morning there,
okay,
man. A little coffee.
Yeah.
Dave Scheinert is here. He is the legendary sports writer for the Washington Post. Lives here in Baltimore, covers the Olympics, has written a million things and probably forgotten more about it. It's a shame you're not on the baseball beat. Guys like you and I know too much about baseball to be outside of it.
I tell you what, I mean, it is a shame in some ways, but it's great to watch on TV.
Institutional
knowledge. I love it. Yeah. I mean, I'm loving this
stuff. Once they get the strike zone done, they get rid of the umpires.
yeah. And then AI gets rid of the writers. So
that'll fix everything, I'm sure. All right, we're here at Costas. I'm doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. You get one, and you got to go pick your kids up, so I got to get you out of here. I am Nestor. We are WNST. Back for more from Costas with Crab Cakes with Dave. Stay with us.